So I'm here with Mark Charles, who's a Diné or Navajo, and is running for president of the United States. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark?
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here. Please allow me to introduce myself a moment. So, Yat'e, Mark Charles Yunashia, Tsin Bake Diné Nishle, Do Tohiglini Bashachin, Tsin Bake Diné Dashache, Do Todachini Dashanella. In our Navajo culture, when we introduce ourselves, we always give our four clans. We're a matrilineal people, and our identities come from our mother's mother. So my mother's mother is American of Dutch heritage, which is why I say Tsin Bake Diné'e. Translated means I'm from the Wooden Shoe people. My second clan, my father's mother, is Tohiglini, which is the waters that flow together. My third clan, my mother's father, is also Tsin Bake Diné'e. Then my fourth clan, my father's father, is Todachitni, and that's the Bitterwater clan. It's one of the original clans of our people. And I just want to acknowledge that we're here in Portland, Oregon today, and we are on the land of the Chinook, the Cowlitz, and the Clackamas. These were the native nations that lived here. They raised their families here. They buried their dead here. They had their children here. Their society was here. And these were the nations that were removed from these lands, ethnically cleansed from these lands, so that the state of Oregon and the city of Portland could be built. And I just like to acknowledge the people whose land I'm on, no matter where I am. So I want to begin just by honoring and acknowledging the land of the Chinook, the Cowlitz, and the Clackamas.
And thank you for that. So what brings you to Portland?
Well, I am here for two reasons. First of all, last night I spoke at a Indigenous Peoples Day event at the Great Spirit United Methodist Church here in Portland, and I was speaking about the doctrine of discovery. Tomorrow I will be having another event because I am also running as an independent candidate for the office of President of the United States. And so I'll be back at Great Spirit United Methodist Church tomorrow evening from 5:30 to 7:30. And I will be hosting a campaign event, a meet and greet there. We'll have some refreshments. And then I'll probably spend about an hour or so laying out my vision and some of the planks of my campaign and of my platform, and taking time to answer questions and just engage with people around my campaign. The centerpiece of my campaign is I'm working to build a nation where we the people truly means all the people.
Running for president is something else entirely. How did you come to that decision?
Well, running for president came out of the process of knowing that there are issues our nation needs to deal with but doesn't know how to deal with. Our nation doesn't know what to do with the fact that we have a Declaration of Independence that 30 lines below the statement all men are created equal refers to natives as savages.
Merciless savages.
Merciless Indian savages. We don't know what to do with the fact that our Constitution never mentions women, specifically excludes natives, and counts Africans as three-fifths of a person. We've never abolished slavery. There's not a single line in our Constitution stating that we have a value for life. Instead, the underlying value is for exploitation and profit. And in 1823, the U.S. Supreme Court references the doctrine of discovery as the legal precedent for land titles. And that precedent and the doctrine get referenced by the Supreme Court again in 1954 and 1985, and most recently in 2005. So our nation has some very deep and foundational level issues. And no one is willing to talk about those issues. The example I use frequently is when you live in a house that has a bad foundation, you're going to get cracks in your walls, you'll get gaps in your windowsills, and you'll get a creaky, crooked floor. Now, you can scream all you want about what color to paint your walls, what kind of caulking to put in your windowsills, and what kind of carpet to put on the floor. But until you go into the basement and examine the foundations and fix those, you're never going to fix the problems with your house. And so my campaign is about taking our nation collectively down to the foundational level and saying the reason we are unable to enact comprehensive and just immigration reform, the reason we can't figure out what to do about gun control and the Second Amendment, the reason we don't know what to do about the value of life, are not because of this one candidate or that one politician. It's because of our foundations. What I'm trying to convince our nation of, because the belief of our nation is that we are white supremacists, racist, and sexist, in spite of our foundations. right? Dr. King called our foundations the blank check. But the truth of the matter is, we are white supremacists, racist, and sexist because of our foundations. It's our foundations that lay this value for white supremacy, racism, and sexism. And so until we address it at a foundational level, we're never going to be able to fix it. And that was demonstrated in the civil rights movement. As good as it was, as deep as that dialogue was, 40 years later, we are now having Black Lives Matter. Why do we have to argue Black Lives Matter? Well, because unfortunately, the civil rights movement didn't deal with the fact that it's our foundations that state Black lives don't matter. I appreciate, I am indebted deeply to our civil rights leaders, but I'm also trying to learn from not only the things they did well, but the things that were they didn't go far enough. And so this is where I am trying to focus my attention on the foundations.
Obviously, one of your goals is just to bring all this stuff up. Is that your main goal, is to just to further conversations about these things?
No, we need to change these things. And the process I have for doing this, one of the central planks of my platform, and I'll just give you the value for this plank. So there is a native leader. His name is George Erasmus. He comes from the Dene people in Canada. And he says that where common memory is lacking, where people do not share in the same past, there can be no real community. If you want to build community, says, you have to start by creating a common memory. I think that quote is brilliant, and it gets to the heart of our nascent problem with race, which is we don't have a common memory. We have a white majority that remembers a mythological history of discovery, expansion, opportunity, and exceptionalism. And we have communities of color that have the lived experiences of stolen lands, broken treaties, slavery, Jim Crow laws, internment camps, boarding schools, segregation, mass incarceration, families being separated at the borders. There's no common memory. And if you look back throughout the entire history of our nation, community at a cross-racial level has never been healthy or good. I'm advocating that the United States of America needs a national dialogue on race, gender, and class. A conversation that I would put on par with the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions that happened in South Africa, in Rwanda, and in Canada. I wouldn't call ours Truth and Reconciliation, though, because reconciliation implies there was a previous harmony. And when you understand how the dehumanizing value of discovery, because you cannot discover lands already inhabited, it's called stealing. The fact that we call it discovery reveals the bias, which is that Native peoples, people of color, aren't human. When you look at our history of slavery, our history of genocide and ethnic cleansing, you look at all the things we've done, you see that the notion of reconciliation is not accurate. So I'm using the term conciliation. Conciliation is merely the mediation of a dispute. So we don't need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We need a Truth and Conciliation Commission. And I think we need one sooner rather than later, which is why it's this, one of the central planks of my entire platform. And then that dialogue is how we're going to deal with the foundations.
So what is the Doctrine of Discovery?
The Doctrine of Discovery, it's a series of papal bulls, edicts of the Catholic Church. The first one was written in 1452. The last one was written in 1493. They say things, which is from Dum Diversus, the one written in 1452 by Pope Nicholas V. They say things like invade, search out, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens and pagans whatsoever. Reduce their persons to perpetual slavery. Convert them to his and to their use and profit. The Doctrine of Discovery is essentially the church in Europe saying to the nations of Europe, wherever you go, whatever lands you find that are not ruled by white European Christian rulers, those people are less than human, and their land is yours for the taking. This is literally the doctrine that let European nations go into Africa and colonize the continent and enslave the people because they didn't think they were humans. The same doctrine that let Columbus, who was lost at sea, land in this new world, which is already inhabited by millions, and claim to have discovered it. Again, as I said earlier, you cannot discover lands already inhabited.
And the reason why this is important now is because that basically got subsumed within the major early Supreme Court decisions regarding the relationship between the United States and the native populations.
And even as recently as 2005, the Supreme Court references the doctrine of discovery. I did a TEDx talk on this case. It's called We the People, the Three Most Misunderstood Words in U.S. History. And I go through this case step by step, and I highlight for people and demonstrate that this is probably one of the most white supremacist Supreme Court opinions written in my lifetime, denying the Oneida Indian Nation sovereignty over their lands that they bought on the open market in the 1990s when they tried to reestablish their sovereignty over them. And that opinion was written and delivered by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Again, she is one of the most progressive, liberal voices of dissent on this very conservative-leaning Supreme Court. And not only did she side with the conservative judges, but in 2005, she wrote the opinion. Because when your land titles are propped up by this dehumanizing doctrine of discovery, white supremacy becomes a bipartisan value.